Welcome to Life 2.0. I'm John St. Augustine. It's another foray into finding the obvious buried in the absurd and to make sense out of the senseless, to go up the down staircase in the outdoor, show up, put your ears back, go, what was that? I'll tell you what it is. It's another episode, and this time we're talking about a road trip. I was on a plane last week to Pittsburgh, and then I drove from Pittsburgh to Lancaster with a German fella, and then we met with a young lady that I've talked about on this podcast quite a few times, Trudy Groning, who is 90 years young. She'll be 91 in December. She had her second book launch, so if you've ever wanted to write a book, it's never too late. It was quite an outing, and that came really on the backside of a very difficult and sad occasion in my life and a deep, deep loss, and I'll talk about that too. And I think this is one of those times, even though it's the Wednesday rant, and there's a lot of stuff that just, you know, absolutely torques my bolts and grinds my gears and rusts my nuts. Lifelines are always more important than headlines. Those things come and go. The lifelines, that's what's most important. Let's get to it. Glad to be back in the air chair, as I call it. I don't know if anybody else calls it that, but I call it that. I dragged out the sacred equipment, which allows me to speak to the whole world. I still find that really fascinating. It's like flying in a plane. As I mentioned in the open, I was on a plane. It's a very short flight from Chicago to Pittsburgh, and it's 3.5-hour drive from Pittsburgh to Lancaster, but it only takes an hour to get from Chicago because you're doing 600 miles an hour. But my point is that I find air travel just as magical as doing this podcast. The fact that there is technology that allows me to sit in my studio slash office slash nap area or meditation booth and turn on all these little cool gadgets and pull this stuff out of a bag in the closet, plug it all in, and then stick it all into the little Zoom machine here, make it all work, take that out, put it in my laptop, which is going on 10 years old. You know, it's like having a really good car, right? I treat it real good. I clean it up. And I can't imagine having a different computer. But anyway, I use that. I put it all in there, and then I edit it on the WavePad sound editor. And then I plug it all up into the platform of Podbean, and then you get a chance to listen all over the world. I know there are people listening in Ireland, South Africa, South America, Canada, and to talk to people all over the world whenever they want it. On demand is the whole thing, right? So while terrestrial traditional radio is, you know, it's on in the background for the most part for a lot of people, this is appointed listening. It's still a learning curve, a year and a half or more into this podcasting foray. And I find it fascinating. I got an email the other day from a subscriber, and it was about a show that I did over a year ago, and they were just getting to it now. So all interesting to me. My job is just to kind of deliver the mail. I can't make you read it, and I don't know when you're going to read it or if you'll ever read it. And interesting enough as well, I've had people that are subscribers that have said, you know, I've only listened to about 5 shows, and there's like 80 plus, but they subscribe and they throw $20 a month into the pot to get this out into the world. And I find, and I'm humbled by that. I'm fascinated by that at the same time. This is a very crowded pond, the podcast pond. And even though I've been in radio a very, very long time, and I always talk about that because some days it seems like a really, really long time, it is a calling that became a career. And to be continuing to do this after 20 years plus, because I'm called to do it, is important to me. It's more than important. It's critical. It's crucial. And that while it's easy to turn on terrestrial radio or find podcasts where they're just people are beating the snot out of each other over things that eventually don't matter, I do whatever I can to maintain some Zen-like stance here, even though I am a knuckle-dragger at times and my barely elevated consciousness keeps me mostly out of trouble. But it gets so glaringly obvious to me the more I am around and the more I sit back and watch and observe things and not get connected and have to be right about everything. And when you pull back out of the chaos and take a few days away from unsocial media, it's amazing to, you know, find out that life still exists. And we've been sticking our noses in laptops and iPhones and cell phones and many different devices for, you know, years. and it becomes a habit. And I don't know that's a good one. I was mentioned I took this road trip. It was really incredible and wonderful thing to do. But everybody at the airport, I was counting them, every third person was just walking, looking down at a phone. It's truly astounding. It's technology is great unless it isn't. So while this technology allows me to talk to the world, I at least want to use it for something that is worth your time and your $20. And if you're not paying $20, you should, because it's worth $20. Anyway, I digress. Trudy Groning was introduced to me a couple years ago, going on 3 years ago now, by a mutual friend in Atlanta. And as you know, if you've listened to some of these shows or if you've connected with me on Facebook or what have you, that I do a lot of ghostwriting. I think I've done 6 books in 5 years, which is a lot, and that's why mine's taken so long. But Trudy's book was truly unique to me because she started it in 1967 when I was just 9 years old, and it was an accounting of her life growing up in Munich, Germany, when World War II was breaking out under Hitler rule, what that was like, and then being shipped off to a castle to live, to stay out of the city while all this bombing was going on, and then come back and find it in ruins and find her family and then become a war bride and come to the United States. And just maybe a decade later, her soldier boy husband passes away from Legionnaire's disease. So she's a single mom who not real, you know, fluent in English with a small boy. And her mom comes over to live from Germany. And then she's diagnosed with MS in 1967, the same year she ships her son off to Vietnam. And it's truly an incredible story. It's also indicative of many people's story from that time. There was this exodus from Germany as many war brides and other countries came to the United States after World War II. And so hers is not the most unique story in the world by far, but it's unique to her. And it's important to her. And so when she approached me to do this, and I only had 44 pages to work with, it was a very daunting task. And we pulled it off, hundreds of hours of work, hundreds, over a year, year and a half. And she was a diligent student and teacher at the same time. And we got the thing done, and it came out in 2018, and I thought that was the end of it. And it's a great end of it. It was perfect. It is not War and Peace. It is an easy read, as it should be. It's her life, told through the character of Jane Raber. Trudy's personal experiences were so difficult for her, she kind of had to come up with an alternative scenario to be able to tell the story and do it in third person in fiction. So it had a lot of moment for me, and I was very proud of the effort that we both put in to get a book out into the world. 98% of manuscripts go into the trash. Good luck trying to get a publisher, unless you're already an established name, or you have this, you know, 17 million people following you, which I find weird, but okay. And so you could be a great writer and no one ever really sees your work or have a great story to tell. So my job has been, which I didn't even know it, you know, all my English and reading teachers in grammar school are shaking their heads going, really? This little industry I've created on the side here, outside of speaking and my own writing and podcasting and audio consulting, all the many hats that I wear, is to help people who have a story to tell put it between the covers of a book. And so it just kind of took on a life of its own. And it's truly an exhausting, humbling, exhilarating, frustrating experience. Every story is different. The authors are all different. So I was really proud of the work with Trudy and locked down, good to go. And then about a year ago, October of 2018, she got a hold of me and said, could we put the book into German? Can you have the book translated into German? I think it's important. Well, my high school German class, 2 years of it I took, would not qualify me to translate a book. So, I mean, I could say things like, putz du das Rad, which means, would you clean my bike? Trinkst du eine Limo mit mir? Would you like to have a lemonade with me? Wenn kommt Benno? When Benno's showing up? You know, really important stuff. So anyway, obviously, I'm not qualified to do that, but one of the subscribers of this podcast is a teacher. We were in conversation, and that's usually how things happen, right? It's who you know. It's always who you know. And I had actually had a couple of bids come in to have some other guys translate the book, and I just didn't feel it. So we're in conversation one day, and we're talking, and Anne says, well, I think we have a German teacher at our school. So we got introduced, and we had a nice chat and talk with Peter. And he's from the Netherlands, but he's got that Germanic accent. And I wanted to say, Wohin gehst du, Peter? Was tust du heute? Where are you going, Peter? What are you doing tomorrow? I think heute's today. I'm not sure. Anyway, you see, that's why I shouldn't do it. The long and short of it is, I put Peter and Trudy on the phone together, and it was like, you know, Astaire and Ginger Rogers dancing away into the world of German translation. And about 4 or 5 months later, they finally got the thing finished for the most part, and a couple blurbs here and there and a couple knickknacks and paddywhack, and we had to figure out how to give the dog a bone. We got it finished. And last week, Trudy had Peter and I come out to her retirement home that she shares with about 2,000 other elders out in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And it was such an interesting trip. It's and as I mentioned about the technology, you know, before I kind of got on a roll here, to get in an airplane to me is such a, it's, I mean, I was in aviation when I was in the Coast Guard. I got the chance to be in helicopters and fly in helicopters and support the helicopter teams and all that kind of stuff. And it's just something about it. It's just something about it. I mean, it's great to be on a ship and you can float around, but that's like, okay, so you can float. Airplanes fly. It's so cool. And it's the safest form of transportation in the world. When you think of the sheer numbers of people that move around minute by minute, basically, around the planet, is the most safe mode of transportation that humans have ever come up with. And you can get killed on the way to the airport or on the way back, but when you're flying, you're pretty good to go. So Peter came and picked me up, and off we went to Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh was stop number one. I have friends there, and I stopped with Peter, and we met with Grandma Judy, who is a rabid Pirates fan and sends me nasty text messages when the Pirates and the Cubs are playing. Had not seen her for about a decade. And then my good friends Joe and Sue. Joe and I are elbow benders from way back, and Sue's kind of the moral rudder or compass for that duo. We kind of listened for the most part. We had a great time, and Peter fell in like he was, you know, like he'd been around 20 years. And it was just a great way to start out. And we had a wonderful time and a wonderful dinner, and libations were had by all. And next morning on Friday, we got up and drove to Lancaster. It's about 3.5 hour drive. They gave me this 2019 Nissan Maxima, and I don't give Nissan Maximas, and nope, you know, I'm not getting paid to say this. I'm just telling you, what a car. I'm telling you, this thing got like 29 miles of the gallon. It was like flying in a plane, which I enjoy, as you know. It was fantastic. So we had a nice drive over there. We get there just in time to clean up and head over to this book launch or this book party or this translation, I guess you could call it a celebration. And there was Trudy Groning, 90 years old. She'll be 91 in December. It just beaming, just beaming. And there on the table were copies of her book in German and copies of her book in English. And there was about 25, 28 people in the room, and they were all connected to the work somehow, mostly because they knew the author, Trudy. And so I did a little introduction, talked about the history of the book, the synchronicity that brought the book to fruition. And it is something I am very aware of in every project I do. If I don't see the connected dots, I don't do it. I'm at a stage in my life where I ain't got a whole lot of time to put up with bullshit. I just don't. You know, as younger, you go into a meeting and people sit around and say, we're going to have meetings until we figure out why we're having meetings. It's that kind of stuff. And I don't do that anymore. If I can see the connected dots a little bit, then I will go in. And I think the big part of all this, as I'm working on my own book and just was working on a chapter, reworking a chapter last night, is, you know, you only get to see what's behind you. You don't see what's ahead. And that's what faith is. Faith is, you go by what you know, and you may not see anything, but that's what it's all about for me. And when I first got the concept of the book, there wasn't much there, but I knew how it came to me, and I knew what was going on, and I could have said no, and I eventually said yes, and all these amazing things happened because of yes. So there I was again, pinching myself, going, here I am in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I'm watching this fellow that I met the first time I ever met Peter in person. We talked dozens of times on the phone, and now we're off on an adventure, you know, and here's Trudy sitting there who endured all of this. And to this day, we had to actually hold her up a couple times because the MS just takes a hold of her, but she still pushes back. And I'm so fortunate to be in this position. I work for it. You know, I pay the price for it and all that kind of stuff. But at some point in all these projects, I look back and I go, wow, I feel so fortunate to be able to help this person complete this or have this goal reached, something like that. So then I turned it over to Peter and he interviewed Trudy at length. And there were some great questions that he asked. And every, you can always tell when you're in a room and it's working, that means and people are leaning in. Now, I will give you the fact that it's possible they were leaning in because they all had hearing aids, but let's just put that aside. The fact of the matter is, energetically, they were leaning in. And at one point, I figured in the room, I kind of counted, I'm guessing ages, that the cumulative years that had gathered in that room total, if you add it all up to 25 people and they were, you know, was about 2,200 years total. I mean, that's a lot of wisdom and a lot of pain and a lot of loss and a lot of joy over a lifetime. And I was just a mere pup. I was just a mere pup in the room. And I just sat back and was in awe of the collective wisdom there. And at one point, Trudy and Peter were talking about grace, and Peter started offering definitions of what grace was. So a friend of his had written a small pamphlet, and there were some definitions in there, and he brought it with, and he wanted to ask Trudy which one that she felt was most appropriate. And when he talked about Friedrich Schuller, which is spelled Schiller, but Schuller, she just perked up. And she talked about a poem that she had learned in fifth grade. She's going to be 91. She remembered the poem from fifth grade. And one of the lines from the poem just stuck with me. And it became kind of the overview of the whole trip for me. And Schuller said, "Grace is the beauty of form under the influence of freedom." Grace is the beauty of form under the influence of freedom. The heads were nodding and hands were kind of clasped in prayer a little bit. And a few people were clearing their throats and wipe away tears. There was something about what she said and what they felt that just went right through them. And it was a reminder to me, especially when I was flying back, and we had a splendid time. Got to meet her family, see her husband John again. And they got a great hot tub there. I was in there boiling like human ramen noodle soup. I like to plan my trips based on hot tubs. You just get to a certain point and that's the way it goes. Anyway, as I'm driving back to Pittsburgh from Lancaster, had said our goodbyes. We're getting ready to get on a plane. I turned off the microscope, which is what we usually look through our lives at most days, and started looking through a telescope and put things in perspective a little bit. And I started thinking about that quote again that Schuller said like 224 years ago, "Grace is the beauty of form under the influence of freedom." And it was a reminder to me that if you've been dropped off on this particular continent, even though I know you're listening in Ireland and in South America and South Africa and other, I get that. But if you are not wanting things or want for something like food, clean water, a few pennies in your pocket, a roof over your head, nobody's knocking on your door telling you what you can and can't say, nobody's stopping you at your border asking for, ID. As difficult as things can be here in the United States, the fact that you got dropped off here is a matter of grace to me. And I had to remind myself of that. Even the worst among us are better off than so many who suffer in the world. It's just, it's astonishing. As I mentioned in one of my TED Talks, the odds of being born are 1 in 400 trillion. And you got dropped off here and you've had the life that you've had. I find it fascinating because even with that in place, we're still unhappy. We're searching. We're fearful. We're certainly divisive. We're adversarial to each other. Over what? Politics? Religion? At one point, it's just... And I think part of this comes from the event that we were at Saturday night, this little perspective shift. There was a brass band up on the stage in this big conference room, and they were all dressed up in their Saturday night best. They had ties on and whatnot. They were the Golden Silver Tones. And they were playing the hits from the 40s and the 50s on and on. And it was just, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. And, you know, eventually some of the older folks got up and started dancing around, tapping toes. I was tapping my toes. You know, it's hard not to tap your toes when there's a horn solo going on. And it was just glaringly obvious to me in this room full of people who have all lived long, full lives, for the better and for worse, that none of what they used to think was so important, the arguments, the politics, the sports, the religion, all that business, it had simply vanished. They were just glad to be alive. All that stuff had vanished. They were just glad to be there. There was this fossil of a fella sitting next to me, and he just nodded off to sleep. He had to be 90. No, I mean, it literally had to be 90 to 95 years old. And he's sitting next to me. He just finally nodded off, and his wife's holding his hand, smiling. And I'm thinking, they probably do this every Saturday night. And her smile made me smile. And in that instant, I couldn't imagine myself at 90 or 95. I just couldn't. Well, shit, I can't believe I'm 60 either. So, I mean, it's all relative, but it was just a shift for me. And it was a needed shift because, listen, I've spent at that time, today's, you'll hear this on a Wednesday, I'm recording it on Tuesday, I had like 3.5 days, no social media. None. No headlines, no television. It was glorious. And there's a feeding frenzy that happens when you're involved in that stuff because it's Pavlov's dog, right? It's Pavlovian response to every single thing that goes on. And because of the world we live in, and this information's coming all the time, we're in constant response or reaction. And that's not good for us. It's just not. What you need to do is go over to the Willow Valley Retirement Home. And you need to cut the rug a little bit with the golden silver tones. Well, maybe not that. But there has to be a diversion at some point. We're on constant alert. Constant. No wonder when you turn on the television and you turn on the news, first of all, there's all drug commercials because the news is making you sick, so turn that off. And we it's so important to unhook for just a few days. It'll all be there when you get back. You know, we think we're all, and listen, I am at the top of the list because of what I've done and the stance I've had in the media and writing books and being on Oprah Radio and being WGN, all the stuff that I've accomplished and very good with that and happy with that, proud of that, blah, blah, blah. Nobody missed me. I don't think anybody missed me. I put the little hiatus flag up when I leave. You know, I'm on hiatus, taking a break, and I always say, be nice to each other. It's just Facebook. The virtual reality, the virtual landfill of Facebook is basically a combat zone. And when I go through it, when I came back again, it was just like I cringed because it's like everything else. When you're in it, you can't see it. We're blind to it. But when you step back and you go, whoa, what's that smell? Oh, it's me. It's something. So I ease back in a little bit, one toe at a time, and it gets easier to not get into the fray. One of the big lessons I've learned through social media, or unsocial media, which is more aptly put, is discernment. I watch stuff roll by and I'm thinking, if all you have to worry about, and I know things are diversions, I get it. I totally get it. If all you're worried about are the Cubs, you don't have any problems, do you? But again, I know that sports is there for a reason to kind of take the edge off life. I mean, I get that. I played it. I get it. I totally get that. And I also know I'm not getting my blood pressure up over Joe Madden or anybody else. I'm not. I like sports, played it, enjoy it. Not going to do it. What's the point? So I've realized that once things that should be enjoyable become irritable, that's when you're done, at least in my opinion. So it was a fantastic trip. And there's some talk, we'll see if it happens. Peter has it in his head that maybe there should be a documentary done, and I agree. I don't know that I can have the time for that. But once again, the ripple effect takes over. So I did my part, and then we went out to Lancaster, and Peter met Trudy, and maybe he'll do his part, and things will connect. And the real takeaway from that trip there for the people that attended that event was that they felt that her life being between the covers of a book was a historical document. It wasn't just her story, even though her name's on the cover. It was a story of many people. It's a slice of time that is buried just in history books, but they felt because it was so personal and told in such a unique way, that it was literally a historical document. Now, out of the six books that I've worked on in 5 years, I don't go to anybody's book launches. There was one guy, David Hirsch. We wrote a book about fatherhood and what happens when kids don't have fathers and all that. And I took his place because he couldn't make an event. And the comedian Tom Dreesen and I had a great time at the Union League Club about 3 years ago. Tom interviewed me. I kind of took David's place as the guy who wrote the book. And we had a great time. But for the most part, I don't get involved in all that. My job is to help the book come to the world. What they do with it when they're done, that's kind of on them. And this was a chance for me to be on the receiving end of what so much effort on this book. And so it's one thing when you walk through, go, oh, here's a book sitting here. And most people just don't get how much energy and effort goes into creating just a simple book. Now I know why Steinbeck wrote such short novels compared to a lot of people. So to see the response, to see Trudy basking in the glory of that, to see her and Peter connecting and talking and sharing all the lessons at another level and seeing the people respond at another level and going up and up was just fantastic. It was a great thing. And so I highly suggest a road trip. You know, when you've had about enough, you know it. You need to unhook all that stuff and kind of move on. And it's been about 2 weeks, actually, since I did a podcast. And there's a couple reasons for that. One is, and by the way, the last one I did, I was drinking Moosehead beer. It's still really good beer. I'm not having any today. I got other stuff going on. Can't drink beer today. But I had about 10 emails from people who listen. It's like, here's my favorite beer. Well, it wasn't a beer poll. I like all kinds of beers. But thank you for sending in. Some people like PBR. Some people like Old Style. No light beer for me, thanks. But it was just really a lot of fun to do that. And so I appreciate the feedback. But this book that I'm working on for months needed some tune-ups that I didn't see. And so going through that process, once again, it is like you set something down, you come back to it, and you go, oh, I see it clearly now. And so that process has been very interesting to me. Plus, it also reminds me why I haven't written a book in 9 years, and I'm not kidding. It's mentally taxing. And I don't see the other side even now. I don't know where it's going to go in the world. One of the most favorite stories I had when I wrote my first book, Living an Uncommon Life, I was on a plane from New York late one night, last plane out. First class, and a young lady was sitting next to me, and I was there for various reasons. I was doing the Oprah Radio thing, and I had a book. It was a bunch of stuff going on, and so I was happy to get out. I just want to get home, and I get on the plane. This young lady's sitting there, very much agitated, and I asked her what the deal was, and she said, "Well, you know, I don't like flying," and I launched into my whole, "It's a miracle. Let me tell you how it works. Lift and no, I don't." She didn't want to hear any of that. So we started to have a conversation, and in short order, I found out that she was Muslim. I don't care. I'm Presbyterian. I mean, to me, religion and certainly politics is the least effective way to describe who you are as a human being. However, we had a really interesting conversation. We went back and forth. And when we were getting closer to Chicago, it was very late, and she mentioned where she lived. And it was more of a difficult part of town. And I said, listen, I'd be happy to give you a ride. It's like late. You're going to take the L train in Chicago to where you live. And she said, oh, that'd be so great. And this and that. We went back and forth and blah, blah, blah. And so I pulled out a copy of the book before we landed. My first book, Living an Uncommon Life. And she opened to the chapter, Wayne Dyer, my friend Wayne Dyer, who passed away a few years ago. And she started to talk about that. You know, so it was all really good. And I signed the book for her. And I said, listen, I'll pull my car up. I'll meet you up here. She goes, okay, great. She never showed up. And it took me about a half hour to figure out she's not coming. And why should she? Here she meets this strange. My intentions were perfect. I'm a dad. And if somebody was able to help my daughter get to where she's going safe, I'd be all for it. Then I also realized I'm a dad and I don't want my daughter getting in a car with some guy off a plane she doesn't know. So, you know, it was like, duh. And that was the end of it. And so about a year later, after the whole thing with the plane, I go to my 40-year high school reunion here in Chicago. It was great to see everybody. You know, you've lost all the hair you're going to lose, hopefully, and your stomach's as big as it's going to get. And everything's changed over 40 years, and we're all just glad to be there. So I'm going through all this, and at one point towards the end of the evening, I walk into the washroom, and somebody, I know who it is, had made images or, you know, copies of the cover of my first book, and they stuck it up in the men's urinal. There's a good time. And I was, of course, laughing about it. It was really funny. And I come walking out of the bathroom laughing, and this couple was there, and they stop. And they're like, John, John. I'm like, yes, yes. And that happens at reunions. Well, not this was a little different. It turns out that they were the parents of the young girl who was on the plane well over a year earlier. And I had given her a copy of my book, but the names never, I mean, we had like 900 kids in our graduating class. I don't remember everybody, and everybody doesn't remember me as much as I'd like to think they do. But that story got told to her mom, and they recognized me from the cover of the book walking out of the bathroom at La Villa restaurant. Here's a plug. If you're in Chicago and you want the best Italian, you go to La Villa, 3632 North Pulaski in Chicago. And it was a great, and she called her daughter at home and we all cried. It was amazing. So it goes back to those connect the dots, you know, and I ended up putting that book and I ended up putting that story in my second book, Every Moment Matters. It's under the chapter called Boomerang. So I never know where all this stuff's headed or where it's going to end up. And you just, all you can do is create it and then you just kind of let it go. So I've been really busy with that and other things. And it was just time to fire the microphone up again. And in all fairness, to how important it is that we all get about our business and not major and minor things. I mean, listen, I have friends of mine that have had heart attacks and strokes and got hit by cars and all kind of horrible things happened to them. And they woke up for a little while. They were a little kinder, a little gentler, and then they went back to being who they used to be. I see those things as opportunities to stay awake, not to fall back asleep, but that's just me. To make some diligent, disciplined, concerted effort to become a better human out of your difficulty and not fall back into just worrying about, you know, should we trade Kyle Schwarber? But that's me. And that's what's often difficult for me in the world to say, don't you see this? Listen, you had two heart attacks. Are you still really worried about this? So about a month ago, I was doing this show and I had made mention of a young lady named Molly who at that time was in serious need of some good energy and prayers. And I never asked for that. Rare. I mean, I just don't do that. It's very private for me. And yet Molly and her family are dear to me, and I felt it was the right thing to do. And I had 10, 12 emails and a phone call or two and a text saying that we're putting those good thoughts out for Molly. And she passed away, sadly, at the age of 44. And I went back to that episode, and I actually removed that request. I edited it out. I took it back out. And so I just wanted to follow up as I finish up about how important it is, as I said, to get about your business. Because listen, if you had a couple heart attacks, you know, like me, I've been electrocuted. I fell out of a helicopter, you know, gave up a kidney, car accident. I've had a lot of near misses. I've had two near-death experiences or episodes, but I don't call them near-death. I call them nearer to life because they woke me up more. And I just have this weird notion that if we keep, part of the reason things are difficult at times is because we fall back asleep and the universe is going, hey, stay awake, you know, wake up. We don't want to have to wake you up. What's that old saying? God comforts the disturbed and disturbs the comfortable. And so while I'm not a regular churchgoer in any way, shape, or form, I feel at times that there is good that comes from collective energy for the better or for the worse, depending on where you put it. And so when I put that notion and that call out for Molly, I was so touched. And it literally changed the way I thought about a lot of unsocial media and Facebook and all that kind of stuff because people really responded. But that just doesn't mean it turns out the way we want it to. It goes the way that it needs to. And so Molly passed. And this Saturday, we will all gather and celebrate her very young but very formidable life. And she, I've known her since she was a little girl. And if I were to say, you know, in one conjoined word, when I think about Molly, I would say Braveheart. I mean, she was about her business all the time. She partied hard. She lived hard. She was a teacher. She taught hard. She traveled hard. She was all about waving her colors for the children, for the people, for the planet, you know, making a difference all the time. Best smile you ever saw in any human being. And as I got ready to do this today, I didn't even know if I was going to talk about it, but I feel like those are the people that I think are the glue that holds so much of the fabric of life together. There's a lot of people that have taken up space, but not a lot of people like Molly occupy their space. There's a big difference. And she definitely occupied her space. We wish it would have been longer. She shoved 88 years worth of living into just a very short 44. And while there is a part of me that is definitely not looking forward to this goodbye, but it's also at the same time a celebration of her life. And so on one hand, I am heartbroken for her family and for her daughter, that this is how it is. And in the same movement, because this is how I think of her, this force of nature Molly was and is on some level. I'm heartbroken she's gone, but I'm just so fortunate. I'm just so fortunate to have known her when she's here. And that's what a lifeline is. Screw the headlines. Screw them. You know, go back in history, pick a day out of any year, and it's chaos. Always has been, always will be. We have to sift through it. We have to make, I get that. I know, I got it. But underneath the headlines are the lifelines. That's where life really is lived. That's what's most important. And so if all we do is argue about the headlines but miss the lifelines, then we're not living. We're just existing. And if you're one out of 400 trillion and you're just existing, I think you missed the memo. Until next time, safe travels, adios.